Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Yes, it is Sunday here on the East Coast, and yes, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, talking the Royal Rumble, which just moments ago went off the air with a flourish, the long simmering turn of Sami Zayn and the somewhat unexpected turn, at least in this moment, of Jey Uso, turning his back, apparently, on the Bloodline. We'll see the follow-up for that to see if that is permanent, as I know a lot of people were expecting Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens versus the Usos, if not at Elimination Chamber coming up in Montreal, then perhaps at WrestleMania. A hot and cold show, I think. There were some pieces of the Rumble matches that were good, but I don't think overall it made for a major thumbs up. There were two singles matches that were just there on the show that didn't really amount to much, didn't add a lot to the show. Hard to say. I'm leaning more thumbs in the middle, although, you know, that last segment, that was a big one, and that's going to turn things around for people because I think that's going to be universally praised. Although, we'll see, because this show is about you, the listener, and you, the Royal Rumble viewer, and what you thought of the show. So if you're listening live, first, welcome. We do this every Sunday night, usually at 8 p.m. Eastern when there's not a WWE or AEW pay-per-view to discuss. It's called Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com, and I am usually joined by a co-host from the Torch family to talk the big shows in pro wrestling. And on nights where there's an AEW or a WWE pay-per-view like tonight, we go on the air right as soon as that show goes off the air because we'd like to get instant reaction and feedback from listeners. So you can be a part of this show by calling 515-605-9345 and pressing 1. To talk, you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I've already got a couple people on hold. I do want to quickly run through the show so that we're all on the same page before we get started. In the Men's Rumble, which led off the show, the winner was Cody Rhodes. The final four was Logan Paul, who was a surprise entrant at number 29, Gunther, Austin Theory, and, of course, Cody Rhodes. And there were not a lot of surprises here in this match. It was Booker T and Logan Paul, basically, as far as non-full-time wrestlers here. So this was a match that, again, kind of like the whole show, there were moments that were really strong, but it never really added up to what I would consider one of the stronger Rumbles in history. But it was middle of the road. It wasn't terrible. It was good, but it was not something that, you know, unless you're a Super Rumble fan, you needed to go out of your way to see. And then match number 2 was Bray Wyatt defeating LA Knight in a Mountain Dew Pitch Black match. This match amounted to being done in the dark, save for the glow lights, I guess. If you've ever been bowling, when they turn down the lights and they do the glow in the dark bowling, I guess that would be what I would equate this to. And it was a short match because when you do a match of that type in front of a live crowd, they're not going to have a lot of patience for it, let alone the fans at home. So it was wise for them to get in, get out. We did have Uncle Howdy diving off of a stage and onto LA Knight, fire erupting. So magic for Bray Wyatt as he continues to assimilate himself back into the WWE roster. I would be remiss if I didn't go back into the Men's Rumble and mention the performance by Gunther, who set a new Rumble record by lasting 1 hour and 10 minutes. He was number 1 in the match and delivered some hard chops. The story of the match down the line, especially when it got to Gunther and Cody Rhodes, was that Gunther was chopping the chest of Cody Rhodes. Remember, he's coming back from a torn pectoral muscle, so that played a big part in the last several minutes of the match as Gunther was working him over. Match number three was Bianca Belair defeating Alexa Bliss for to retain the Raw Women's Championship. Again, not much to that one. It was kept short. More teases after the match of Alexa Bliss rejoining Bray Wyatt in some form. Then we had the Women's Royal Rumble. Number one was Rhea Ripley, who ended up becoming the winner. Number two was Liv Morgan. We had a few surprises in this one. Roxanne Perez, the NXT Women's Champion, was entrant number eight. We had Zoe Stark, again from NXT, at number 13. Piper Niven returned as Piper Niven, dropping the Doudrop name. Chelsea Green made her WWE return at number 20 and set a record for the shortest stint in a Women's Royal Rumble. We also had Michelle McCool, who was at ringside, come in at 25th, Indy Hartwell at 26th, and Nia Jax, a surprise return, at number 30. So they relied less on the Legends coming back, as they have more numbers in the women's division lately. And then match number five was Roman Reigns over Kevin Owens. There was a ref bump. There was a visual pinfall by Kevin Owens, but it was not to be for Owens, as Reigns retained. The attack was on after the match, and Sami Zayn was invited to play a part in it, and Roman gave him a chair. They had handcuffed Kevin Owens to the ropes, and the Usos delivered super kick after super kick, and Sami Zayn, instead of using the chair on his best friend Kevin Owens, used it on Roman Reigns to a gigantic pop. Of course, he got beat down after the match by Solo Sikoa, Jimmy Uso, and Reigns. Jey Uso, instead, very conflicted, very emotional, left the ring without attacking Sami, which caused the Bloodline to continue the attack. So, a lot to unpack from this one. It'll, no doubt, in the next few weeks, it will unfold, but that is your road to WrestleMania starting here after the Rumble tonight. So a lot of interesting stuff. We expect to have an on-site correspondent, Ben Tucker, who was my co-host on the show last week. I just got a DM from him on Twitter, says he'll be calling in momentarily, so we'll get to him when we can. You know, it was a lot to talk about coming out of the show, for sure, and I'm excited to hear what people thought of the show. 515-605-9345. If you want to hang on the line and listen, you're more than welcome to. If you'd like to offer your opinion, press 1, and they'll show up in the queue to talk, and I'll get to you as soon as I can. I think we have a lot of new listeners here tonight, so if you do choose to call, remember that this is a PG show, and because we have a lot of people calling in, if you could keep your questions or comments to 3 per caller, that would be great. It'll allow us to get through this in a reasonable amount of time. So I want to start off with the 410 area code. Starting us off tonight is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Curious your thoughts on the Rumble tonight.
Thank you, Greg, for taking my call. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, Reverend Keith. Good to talk to you again. And I'm sure you have something to say about that main event segment. I'm curious your thoughts on it.
Yes. I was curious at the onset of this undisputed title match, what challenge would Roman Reigns give to Sami Zayn? If you recall, back on Monday night, he said that the ultimate test or the ultimate challenge to prove your loyalty to the Bloodline would come on Saturday night. So I had even tweeted that out, you know, at the onset of the match. What do you think the ultimate test would be? And I kind of sensed it was going to go in this beatdown direction. And It was very emotional. It was riveting. It was something that we all could relate to, especially in Jey Uso's stance, where he actually had tears in his eyes and he couldn't take it. After coming to Sami's defense just, 6 nights ago. It was a very riveting end to the show, and I was wondering why they booked the show the way that they did. And now I can see why, because when you think about it, and I heard you say moments ago that it was just, there were two matches in between that were just there, you know, the Pitch Black match and also Bianca's title defense against Alexa. So now I see why they bookended the show the way in which they did, because I would have thought if they weren't going to end the show on a high note, they should have had Cody's moment at the end. But now I see why they did it the way they did. I do believe that this will lead to a six-man at Elimination Chamber. I could see Owens, Zayn, and Jey Uso versus Sokoa, Jimmy, and Roman. Then Jey realizes that he's better off with his brother and turns on Sammy and Kevin, and that will lead to the tag title defense at Mania. Your thoughts on this potential fantasy booking option?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers seem to support that. We do have 3-on-3 right now, although what happens with Jey Uso, you know, do they go back and forth with him like that, or do they keep him on the Zayn Reign side? I mean, you know, they're tag team champions, so the Usos are. So something's got to give there. It certainly does seem like with Sami Zayn switching allegiances, I would assume that Jey gets talked back into coming back over to the Bloodline. And maybe now he'll have to do something to prove himself to Roman at all. It's just hard for me to think that Jey is going to be on Sammy and Kevin's side for any significant length of time, even leading up to Elimination Chamber next month. I think it's more likely that, you know, I don't even know. I think it's in Montreal, Elimination Chamber is. And we know that's the hometown of Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. There has been some online discourse over the last few days that suggests that Sami Zayn win the Elimination Chamber and challenge for, and I know we've talked about this the last few weeks, Reverend Keith, here on Wrestling Night in America, and challenge for one of either the WWE title or the Universal Championship in a split on one night of WrestleMania, while Cody Rhodes challenges for the other title on the other night of WrestleMania. So you would have Roman Reigns going against Sami Zayn, for example, on night one, Cody Rhodes on night two, defending the split championship, one on each night. So that's hanging over things. So this does complicate things a lot, which is, you know, it makes sense that the next step in the storyline would do that. And I think the whole discourse around what Jey Uso is going to do next is really what's going to lead things over the next few days. Because Sammy, it's pretty clear where Sammy stands, right? There's no going back for Sammy. There's no vacillating now between, gee, the Bloodline, or should I go with Kevin? Or, you know, he's made his choice after tonight, and the Bloodline has made their choice. But Jey Uso is still on that fence, right? He was obviously very conflicted leaving, walking out. It didn't necessarily feel like a permanent walkout on the Bloodline. So that's the thing that I'm really, that my antenna's up for after tonight, is what happens with Jey Uso.
I can concur. And myself, you, and Ben Tucker did discuss this last Sunday night, to be exact, about defending the titles on each night of WrestleMania when we realized that Dwayne would not be there. So I think that would be a good call if they decide not to go with the tag match or six-man match. That does bring up the potentiality of Sami Zayn wrestling Roman one of the two nights, and I think the fans would love it. I mean, the stadium would be a blast with this. So that's a good synopsis of what happened tonight, but I just love the way it ended. I'm watching this handsome gentleman host the Royal Rumble press conference, a good friend of mine, Byron Saxton, and now he just brought on Cody Rhodes. So that leads me to Cody's performance. Now, they couldn't have had a more predictable Royal Rumble finish than they did, but aside from Cody looking great and his finale with Gunther was excellent, not only did they make you believe in the story that was being told, that Cody would go to great depths and lengths and heights to show that he was back to win it, to get that title opportunity against Roman. But Gunther set a record. He actually, when I heard you say an hour and 10, it was actually an hour and 12 minutes, 45 seconds. He lasted, and that was a record. And, I mean, Gunther's no small guy like Rey Mysterio or Shawn Michaels or Bryan Danielson, who had set records previously. Gunther's a huge man. And for him to go and last that long, and, I mean, that was very impressive. So what were your thoughts on some of the highlights in the men's Royal Rumble match?
Yes, certainly Gunther lasting that long. I think what warms my heart more than anything else is really what that means. I mean, that is a huge thumbs up, a huge sign of belief by WWE Creative in Gunther that they would give him that kind of push, and he would be the guy they would choose to break the record here tonight when there were a lot of other candidates who they could have done that with. So I take that as a really positive sign for Gunther moving forward, you know, setting some things up. You know, they set something up there with Brock Lesnar and Gunther potentially down the line, Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar. You could see one maybe at WrestleMania, one maybe at SummerSlam. You know, you had the Rey Mysterio not coming out at number 17, presumably attacked by his son Dominic, although we got no footage of it. But that, you know, that'll play a part moving forward as well. And, you know, just some other interactions that you can look at there. Austin Theory toward the end, Edge coming out and making his return, going after the Judgment Day. So that is not finished. And, you know, Logan Paul being involved would seem to indicate they've got something for him. Maybe Seth Rollins, they did a little face-off there during that match. Perhaps Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul at WrestleMania, which would be a really good match. So there were certainly some highlights like that in the match. Sheamus lasting a long time from the number two position in the match. Johnny Gargano lasting quite a while as well, which surprised me, from the number five spot. So some real highlights. I think one of the disappointments for me was Montez Ford. I thought, you know, there had been some hints that maybe he'd be in line for a babyface push at some point, but given the way that things went down here, he was not spotlighted at all, was pretty significant afterthought, didn't last very long, so perhaps that goes on the back burner, at least for a little while. But, yeah, there were some highlights for sure in this match.
Yeah, it was very interesting and momentous, considering this was the shortest time that Brock Lesnar ever lasted in a Royal Rumble. And it was interesting, his interaction with Lashley. Lashley eliminated Brock, and then Lashley was eliminated later on. So it was very exciting, and they had some good spots there. You know, I really enjoyed that Men's Royal Rumble match, and at the time when it ended, I was saying to my wife, I said, it's a tough act to follow, because now you would have to bookend it with something special. And they did, but mm-hmm. everything in between was like just filter, or filler, as we say. Mm-hmm. Now, my third and final point is the Women's Royal Rumble match. Byron brought out Rhea Ripley to start this press conference that's being aired live now on Peacock. Cody Rhodes is still talking to Nick Heisman as we speak. But Rhea was, by Sean Ross Sapp, the importance of going coast to coast. And she said that she was honored to have been the first woman ever to go coast to coast from start to finish. She lasted an hour and 2 minutes. She entered at number one and won it. So, you know, she says she has a lot to think about as far as whether she wants to go after Charlotte to relive their feud from years ago in 2020, or does she want to go after Bianca? So I'm sure it'll be Bianca or Becky or whoever's the champion in 2 months. But Rhea was very impressive. I felt that they should have utilized more talent from NXT. Roxanne looked great. Indy was okay. I hear they're bringing Chelsea back for a comedic Miss Karen character, so that'll be interesting to follow up, because she was excellent as a drunk in Impact a few years ago as Laurel Van Ness. But I would have preferred to see more NXT talent other than the ones I named and Zoe Stark. They had so many others down there that they could have used and to get exposure and to gain experience. What were your thoughts on the lack of the NXT women being utilized in the Women's Royal Rumble match?
You know, I think I would have had more of a problem if there were a lot of spots and they brought back, you know, Kelly and a lot of the legends that they bring back every year. So the issue with this year was, since Triple H took over, they've brought back a lot of women to the main roster. And so they didn't have the need to fill in a lot of spots like they've had in the past in the Women's Rumble. So, you know, would it have been fair to bring in more NXT women in place of, say, Emma or Xia Li or other main roster women? I don't know that that would necessarily be fair, in as much as fair comes into play here. You know, I was actually disappointed in how Roxanne Perez was booked. I thought that she should have lasted a lot longer. So, you know, it's one thing to get NXT women in the Women's Rumble, but if you're going to treat them like cannon fodder and no better than lower card women on the main roster, I'm not sure what the advantage is of that. So if this was any other year where they really need a lot of spots to fill, I would have said, yeah, I would rather see them bring in women from NXT as opposed to bringing back the same legends every year. But they just didn't have that room this year to do that. So I thought they picked the right ones from NXT in terms of Zoe Stark, in terms of Roxanne Perez, Indy Hartwell. You know, I could make an argument for probably a couple other women in place of her, but you know, I understand why they went with her here, especially if they're considering bringing her up to the main roster. So I'm not sure I really see a lot of spots where I would have used NXT women in this match a lot more anyway. So again, any other year I could see that, but this year with the depth that it is on the main roster and just the number of women they have, I'm not sure I see that. But Reverend Keith, thank you for leading us off here tonight. Really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Let's go to our on-site correspondent and my co-host from last week. We previewed the Royal Rumble here together on Wrestling Night in America. He is in San Antonio for the Royal Rumble. Ben Tucker is with us. And, Ben, I really appreciate you finding a spot to talk with us and give us a live report from the Rumble tonight.
I'm more than happy to be here. I still have the Alamo Dome in my sights, live reporting from San Antonio. It was quite an enjoyable show. It had its ups. It had its downs. There was no working internet in the stadium, so I spent instead of live tweeting, I was live texting with my wife because that was all I was able to do. I enjoyed the show. I thought the Rumbles were solid. Well, actually, I don't know how you want to break this down. There's a lot to talk about, and I'll try not to hijack everything. But I got two main points. One, the Rumbles were designed by people who were scared. That is my thesis, okay? And two, Bray Wyatt is a lizard person, and that's canon in WWE now. And I'm very excited to talk about that as well. I'm not sure what you'd rather tackle here. I'll leave it open to you.
Well, you've given us a lot to chew on already. So let me start from the beginning. Sounded like a big crowd there in San Antonio. They announced over 50,000. What was your take on just the attendance?
So the way it was structured generally, anything that – so where the cameras were set up, you know, level with the ring, the hard camera side, everything behind that was tarped off, which is not – any different from how they've been doing their stadium shows lately. They like to have a packed crowd on like three sides of the arena, and then whoever you don't see is tarped off. The only time you really saw that was during the Into the Bray Wyatt segment, where they were going up that like random pyramid to nowhere. But in general, seats were pretty filled. And honestly, that's a big accomplishment for a number of reasons, not the least of which are ticket prices. And also compared to, you know, I've been at most of the stadium shows they've had since returning from the pandemic. And I mean, you know, coming from partial sales in Tampa for WrestleMania 37 into SummerSlam that year, it still was, you know, it wasn't great. I mean, they have super high ticket prices, but they're selling them out. And this is, I would say, the healthiest crowd I've seen. Comparable, I mean, not in size comparable, but I would say an atmosphere similar to last year's WrestleMania. So positive there.
And I think it's important, you mentioned this on the show when you were on last week, but I think it's important context for the listeners out there is you attend a lot of live shows for WWE and professional wrestling. So you're coming at this and your perspective here tonight of the live show is of someone who's attended a lot of different live shows. And I think that's important to add to what you're saying. I think it gives it a little more gravity perhaps even. So the next question I have before we get into anything else is Hardy, great live performance or the greatest live performance in wrestling history?
So after the match before that, I think the
Wooden
Rumble.
I say that tongue firmly in cheek, by the way, for those of you who are about ready to get angry at me.
So after the Women's Rumble, they start setting up these platforms in the ring, and everyone's like, oh, my God, what are they doing? Like, did they go to ring? You know, people are getting excited. They're like, what are they going to do? Are they setting up the big thing? And then the drum set comes in, and people go, what? And people are talking about, like, oh, there's that Hardy guy. They're like, Jeff Hardy? Like, is Jeff Hardy here? No. And then, like, Chubby Kid Rock shows up. And here's my thing. I grew up in a household where my father listened to like Grand Ole Opry's and he collected those and he loves, you know, Bill Monroe and bluegrass music. I don't want to be the guy who's like, this isn't country. But like, I feel like we can all agree that was not country music. That was butt rock with like a forced country accent, right? I feel like we can all agree on that. I mean, it was bad as well, but there was nothing going. I don't know if it came across on TV, the apathy and booze, but they were certainly there.
That might be the kindest review of that musical performance that I've seen or heard since it took place. So bravo to you. Look, I listen to country music. I'm familiar with Hardy, and I still didn't bother to stick around for that. I had other things to take care of while that was going on, so I definitely found something else to do with my time, so I can't pass judgment on that musical performance. I just know that I've read online on Twitter plenty of other people who are more than willing to pass judgment on that performance. So I had to ask you about that straight away. The Men's Royal Rumble, the first match on the show, won by Cody Rhodes. Crowd seemed into most of it. The consensus kind of seemed to be online that there was some good stuff early on, some really good stuff late, but a lull in the middle. Did the crowd react to the match in that way, or were they hot throughout, in your opinion?
What I noticed, and I noticed this in the women's too, and this is why I was saying earlier that I think they were playing it safe, is that early on you have a lot of big names in there. You know, you have big moments like Brock, and I forget what exact number Brock comes out of, but it felt like at least a bit earlier in the Rumble. But it seemed like any, like, real, like, big name, it felt like was getting sort of cleared out of the way early so that by the time Cody Rhodes came out, it was like, okay, well, there's really no one else we could possibly want to win. other than Cody Rhodes, you know? And so the first half of the Rumble felt pretty exciting, but I feel like by the time Brock left, it was like, okay, well, we know, like, basically everyone was waiting for Cody to come out. And Cody didn't come out to number 30. And he got a great reaction, and that was good. But, you know, I think the end of the match suffered a bit because they wanted to make sure Walter had that record, which, and I haven't been able to check, is that time longer than Daniel Bryan's time in the Greatest Royal Rumble?
I believe so. It ended up being an hour and 12 minutes for Gunther.
Okay. It felt like they were sort of waiting to, like, they were sort of dragging it out a bit because the crowd was, like, ready for Cody to win because as awesome as Gunther is, we know he's not main eventing WrestleMania. In his, you know, currently,
yeah.
Right, Intercontinental Champion, very unlikely. And so the crowd was, like, waiting to cheer for Cody to win. And it wasn't bad. Like, their back and forth was really good, and there were some great near falls. But it really felt like a match designed for Cody Rhodes to win. And in that respect, it worked very well. The crowd was very receptive. But it did mean that there was a lot of it felt like there was a big orb of, like, nothingness happening around Cody, outside of, like, the Logan Pauls and such, to zhuzh it up just a bit.
Yeah, it did seem like the crowd was with it for most of the Rumble, and obviously Cody winning was a big moment, and like you said, I think a lot of people anticipated that when it got down to the last two, but certainly Gunther earned his stripes here tonight. And
mm-hmm.
hanging for so long and then hanging at the end with Cody, which they had an interesting mini match there toward the end as they were the last two. Bray Wyatt versus LA Knight, Mountain Dew Pitch Black match. Didn't really know what that was going to be going in. My sense was they kept it short because you can't do a long match like that without the live crowd getting restless because it didn't seem like they could see much. So, what could you see as an audience member with the lights turned off and the glow of this match?
Oh, you could see it great. It was awesome. It was the coolest thing. When they turned the lights off, people were like, what? I mean, they were super excited. I mean, people couldn't see a lot of it because a lot of it happened on the floor. I think the reason why they probably kept it short or another potential reason is I don't think they wanted Bray's face paint to wipe off or like his,
oh, yeah.
or his scales or whatever because, you know, he only took like one or two bumps in there and then he swapped over to the freak mask, whatever that's going to end up being. But, yeah, it was really cool to watch live because no one knew what to expect. The crowd was really there for Wyatt. They responded well to everything. And it didn't overstay its welcome either. So I was pleasantly surprised by the match. And I mentioned this last week, but I'm a huge Bray Wyatt guy. And mm-hmm. depending on how far deep you want to go with the Bray Wyatt lore, I thought tonight was absolutely fascinating because and once again, right, like we don't know the whole story, like there's a lot going into it, but what I interpreted from the match is that the black light, the glow, revealed, you know, Bray Wyatt's body has scales on it, right? It has the six etched into the side of his head. To me, that signifies that Bray is a lizard person. Now, do lizard people exist in real life? No. But in the wacky world of wrestling, the idea that Bray Wyatt, who's been possessed by demons, who's a cult leader, the guy who for over a decade, like his whole story arc is that he's been inhabited by some sort of, you know, higher other being, like a demon or a devil, which essentially turns into the Fiend. Long story short, right? The fact that he's susceptible to these types of things because he himself isn't even human. He's a lizard creature, right? obviously, I can be looking too far into it. But considering how deep Bright gets with his characters, considering how you know, in real life, you know, him and Bo have talked about, you know, conspiracies and, like, the mole people and all that, I think that that gave purpose to the Pitch Black match. I think it gives a ton of potential depth to Bray's character. And it's perfect, like, wackiness in wrestling, right? Like, Undertaker is an undead mortician, right? And, like, they don't need to mention any of this. This is all just icing on the cake for people who are fans of Bray Wyatt, like me, and who want to overanalyze everything. But he does everything for a purpose. And the fact that only under the lights, you see that he's got these scales. I'm like, oh, great. Bray's a lizard person. This explains all this supernatural wonkiness and, like, you know, because it's like, what can the lizard person do? Who knows? You know, lizard people. He can make it up whatever he wants. I just loved it. I don't know what to make of the additional mask and garments he put on afterwards. I'm fascinated to see where that goes. The ending visual of Howdy just eating himself off that platform, exploding onto LA Knight. I mean, like, live, it was cool. But, you know, we could see on the screen as
where
well.
Where did that take place, by the way, Ben? Where did that dive take place relative to where you were and where the ring was?
So, okay, I'm trying to figure this out. So, you know the hard cam, right? Hard camera?
Mm-hmm.
So it was right next to the hard camera. So, like, basically
okay.
The opposite of where the main camera was facing the whole night.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like, right next to those cameras, and that's why you didn't see it for the rest of the night, because that whole side of the arena was tarped off.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I was just interested to see, because it's kind of hard to tell when you get brawling up and into things, it's hard to tell where that takes place. To move on real quick to the last three matches here, Bianca Belair versus Alexa Bliss, was that reaction by the crowd kind of a hangover from the previous match, or was there just not a lot of interest or maybe not a lot of belief that Belair would lose the title here?
I mean, Alexa Bliss isn't a very good wrestler. That was the main issue with the match. I'm sorry. Alexa Bliss is a fantastic character. She's a huge asset to the industry. She's not a good wrestler, and it wasn't a good match, you know? Because when the match started, people were into it, and it's, what'd you do? You know, you did nothing. Alexa did, like, a role. And it's you know, Alexa has her own journey. I'm not going to criticize her, right? But, you know, back in NXT, she did the twisting moonsault. She did the backflips. Here, what did she do? She did punch and kick, and she did a few rolls. And, like, that's great, but if you're a small wrestler facing a powerhouse, it's like you got to do more than that. And, you know, people talk about how WWE's women's division is leagues ahead of AEW. You're not going to see a match like that on AEW Dynamite. They might only get one match per week, but, like, we're not going to get – yeah, I mean, that was like – that's like Sky Blue level, man. Sky Blue. I like Sky Blue, but, like – you know, Sky Blue's what, 2-3 years into the business? Alexa's been here like 10. It just wasn't very good.
And she's not and she's not challenging for a title on pay-per-view.
Yeah, it was just a mess. It was just a mess.
So the Women's Royal Rumble then, Rhea Ripley coming out number one, Liv Morgan number two. It didn't seem like there were it didn't seem like until Becky Lynch, the crowd was really reacting to a lot of the women who came out, certainly in contrast to the men's rumble. Did you get a sense that the men's rumble people were more enthusiastic for, whether it's the individual entrances or what was going on in the ring, as opposed to the women's rumble?
So actually, I remembered one thing really quick. Right after the Alexa match, they played the Wyatt like clip thing, right? And so as soon as they ended that, they had the spotlight on Alexa, and everything went black. People were like, oh, my God, what's happening? And then they played the Applebee's commercial. I've never heard a whole stadium laugh that loudly before. So the Women's Rumble, we talked last week, and I said I feel like having two Rumbles a year is a mistake, and I said that I feel like the women's roster isn't deep enough for a Royal Rumble, and I feel like this just validated me. I feel like if you had a 15-woman Royal Rumble, that would have been really good, you know, like something different. But, I mean, Tegan Knox, Candice LeRae, like, Emma, they're all very talented people, but, like, and I'll give them credit, they did not rely on past women stars. I feel like that was a statement they were trying to make, and I feel like they did a good job succeeding there. But, dude, like, it was, like, the credible challengers in that match were Becky Lynch, Asuka, and Rhea Ripley. And Asuka wasn't in there until like over halfway through. And Becky was out pretty quickly, you know? I don't understand why Becky was thrown out so early, because pretty much as soon as Becky was thrown out, it's like, okay, Rhea's winning. And for the first half of the Rumble, it's okay, we know Rhea's staying in because, you know, she's credible. And I'll give him credit. The last, like, 3 to 5 minutes of the Rumble, I think were better than anything in the men's Rumble. I think that that finish was really good, and I thought it made Liv Morgan look great. And I thought Asuka brought it. She was awesome. And, like, she made me think that, like, okay, maybe she's going to win, you know, do over with Charlotte. And Rhea looked great. But it was, you know, 20 filler entries. Like, when you're number 30 is Nia Jax, like, and she's out in a minute. Here's my biggest takeaway. Who, like, did Chelsea Green, like, piss in someone's Cheerios? Pardon my language, I'm sorry. But if the only person you're debuting in the Rumble gets eliminated in 3 to 5 seconds, like, it's not setting them up for success. Like, how do you recover from that? She got one of the louder reactions in the Rumble.
I think the thought is it's going to play into her new character that she's going to be playing on television. So that is the prevailing wisdom for it. I get under normal circumstances what you're saying, but there is a thought that that's going to play into the character that she develops on TV.
I will reserve my judgment, but after you have someone who's debuted on the main roster like 3 times now, who kept getting injured, I feel like having her come up, get eliminated immediately, when she had one of the louder reactions in the Rumble, after what is a Rumble that people were really kind of meh on, it just reads really weird to me. You know, I don't know. Like, no matter what character you have, I don't know how you couldn't benefit from presenting her strongly initially to be like, look, see, she can be a threat. But,
Yeah. Oh, then we have the main event, which, you know, we could talk about what happened during the match, but that was pretty moot. It was all about the post-match, and I'm guessing that nobody left their seats and headed for the exit when Roman Reigns defeated Kevin Owens. They were wanting to see what was going to develop afterward. Ben, walk us through the reaction from the crowd and really how focused in on what was going on and how invested that people there live were in what was happening as it was going on, because that Sami Zayn turn sounded loud on TV. And again, you're someone who's attended a lot of live shows. Where does that pop? And maybe even the Jey Uso pop when he walked out, where do those pops rank for you amongst some of the louder ones that you've heard in attending live shows?
Like, stadium pops are hard, right? Because it's a bigger arena, it's echoier, it's harder to sync up with people throughout buildings, which is why chains don't carry as well. Outside, in the last, like, 5 years of stadium shows, I'd say the loudest reaction I've heard is probably Cody Rhodes debuting last year at Mania. I'd say that number two is probably Sami Zayn hitting Roman Reigns with that chair. I mean, the crowd, it was fun because the crowd wasn't really making any noise. They were silent, waiting to see what was going to happen. You know, and the way the match went, people cheered fine for Kevin Owens, but he was a pawn. Even the pre-match videos, like, yeah, we know Kevin Owens isn't going to win. That's not why you guys are still watching. Roman got a great reaction. I'd say it was like 80% of the crowd was pro-Roman. And this post-match angle really turned around probably 80% of that 80%. And I mean, I'm listening to like grown men behind me, you know, they're like, oh my God, Sammy, don't do that. He's gonna hurt you, Sammy. Like, don't do it. Like, they're getting into it, which is awesome, uh-huh. Right? That's pro wrestling. But when Sammy hit Roman with that chair, I felt like the entire stadium in unison, like, leapt onto their feet and pumped their fists in the air. Such an amazing moment. And then Jay leaving wasn't as big, you know, of course, which it'd be hard to be. But it was still a massive reaction for Jay. And then just afterwards, after the beatdown, it was just silent. The crowd was just, it felt like, you know, Empire Strikes Back or something where, you know, all hope is lost. Right. I was wondering why they were closing with this match, but in the end it was the right call. I don't know where this ends up with Sammy for WrestleMania, but I think if there's anything we should have learned from from this year's Royal Rumble, it's that the people in charge are listening to fan sentiment, they're aware, and they're going to work with that to get the result that they want, which ultimately is what we want from a good pro wrestling company. So,
all right, Ben, I really appreciate your time tonight. I'll let you have the last word. Is there anything else that happened maybe that we didn't see, or any other observations you had from being there live in San Antonio tonight that you'd like to share?
Not that much. WWE Productions Live, they've stripped away a lot of the stuff they do just for the live crowd. And so it's pretty much, you know, they didn't even say hi to the crowd. They just went on air with the pay-per-view, which would have never happened years ago. But, you know, that's the way it is. So it was pretty streamlined. You know, we saw the same ad that you guys saw live. But the crowd was there for it. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Rumble here again in the future. Had a good time.
And that's what it's all about. Ben Tucker, thank you for joining me here tonight and being our live on-site correspondent at the Royal Rumble.
All right. A pleasure as always.
All right, that's Ben Tucker, who was my co-host last week previewing the Royal Rumble here on Wrestling Night in America. We've passed the 1 o'clock hour on the East Coast. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. This is Wrestling Night in America, taking your phone calls and emails here about the Royal Rumble. So we've got a lot of callers to get through. So we will go back to the phones. The 623 area code is Brian from Phoenix, Arizona, 31-year Torch subscriber. Brian, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hey, Greg, how are you? Hopefully you have a great night. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's a pleasure, Brian. What did you think of the Rumble?
I enjoyed the card overall. I'm watching the press conference in the background. And I'll say what I'm going to say. I have two things to talk about briefly so you can let other phone callers get on. It's only like 11:14 out here in Phoenix, so you know, still have a long night to go. So anyway, Greg, I really always appreciate yourself and what you do. So I was listening to Ben Tucker, just interviewing him from – he was in San Antonio. I was kind of shocked to say that the Alamo Dome, or at least he said he didn't get any internet, which is, to me, sounds really weird. You know, to me, this is 2023 now, and if a place doesn't have internet, especially a big place like that who holds various big things. I'm surprised that, well, maybe this is the one a point that the internet wasn't working. But the one thing I want to say about what Ben said, and he did a great job with his on-site correspondence, is about how he felt that the mix things up with the Women's Royal Rumble and have them only have 15 women. So I was I guess he wants Nikki Bella to come after him, you know, have the hashtag off of him, you know, give these a chance. You know, how come the women only have half when the men can have 30? So he must want the women after him.
Yeah, I understand practically that sentiment, but it's just you're setting yourself up for criticism that would be unnecessary and that would distract for what you're trying to do if you did something like that. So, you know, you have to fill from NXT, you have to fill from the Legends, all right, you know, that's fine to pad it out to 30. Do whatever you need to do, but cutting back to 15, I think, would draw unnecessary negative attention to what you're trying to do.
I agree. And while Triple H is on right now on the post-card conference, he's a girl dad, so, you know, I don't think that's going to change. the amount of women being in the Royal Rumble is going to change. So what I'm going to talk to you about, and you and Ben talked about it briefly, and I'm going to keep this brief, of course, is Alexa Bliss. So I didn't get the time hack for the match. How long the match was? What it was, relatively speaking, wasn't very long. Lost to Bianca Belair clean, which I thought was good. But what's next for Alexa? I mean, we say what's next because I looked this up, Greg. So she's been involved with the Bray Wyatt storyline since July of 20. So you see, we're coming up here. Well, 2.5 years, let's say it that way, the easiest way to say it. And, you know, it started off a really, really, really slow burn where she was still teaming with Nikki Cross back then, and she just had a single dread in her hair that was one of it was really the Fiend who attacked her, to be honest, but a single dread in her hair, and just kept going slowly and slowly until she became what she became and got embroiled with the Bray Wyatt, Fiend, Randy Orton feud. And you saw how Uncle Howdy has been coming out, and she even talked about him. So my question is, what do you see next for Alexa Bliss? I pulled up the women's roster on Raw, not to say that she can be moved to SmackDown, but I don't see any potential, any potential women that she could wrestle at WrestleMania. But I know they want to at least keep her in the spotlight, so maybe she could do something in the backstage or some kind of interview. You know, maybe she can do a Touch of Bliss, and maybe she interviews Bray. But I think he's going to need to have a match. So in your thoughts or in your opinion, what do you think would be next for Alexa Bliss as far as in the ring is concerned? If you want to dip a little bit deeper into Bray Wyatt and Uncle Howdy, you can as well.
I think that's where she's going to go, is deeper down the Bray Wyatt lore rabbit hole, as opposed to having another necessarily traditional feud with another woman, at least right away. I think they've done too much teasing at this point. I think they need to pay it off in the will she or won't she join Bray Wyatt. So if she does join up with Bray, I think it is kind of strange that they're doing this tease while Alexa Bliss is on Raw and Bray Wyatt is on SmackDown. Now, obviously, the brand split is not a hard and fast rule. There is some bending of those rules that we've seen. So I would expect Alexa to move to SmackDown if she were to go fully back under Bray Wyatt's spell, which, you know, I don't know why you would be doing these teases if that wasn't the direction you were going to go, if you were to swerve her and have her, you know, somehow reject that. That would be an awful lot of time spent going nowhere. So I would expect more than her getting into a traditional one-on-one feud is kind of almost feuding with herself or feuding with the supernatural, maybe trying to stop from going back under Bray Wyatt's spell while ultimately, in the end, falling under it. So that's kind of my read on the situation.
I would agree as well. you know, I would, you know, she doesn't have to wrestle WrestleMania. You know, it's not, you know, while I would like everybody to have some kind of spot on it, you know, if you have 100 wrestlers, 100 people can't appear, you know, on both nights. So hopefully she'll do something more so on the wrestling side. But, you know, I could see something backstage or interview-wise as well. But I'm interested to see how it played out because, you know, as I mentioned previously, you know, this has been going on for a while. You know, Bray was gone for a while too, but this has been on slow, hot burn, no burn, and now simmering back up again. So I always, I think all of us, or a lot of us, are fans of long-term storytelling. And this is an example of it. Greg, I'll go ahead and let you go and let some other callers get on, let you read some emails as well. I want to say hi to Reverend Keith. I heard him on earlier today. Hi, Reverend. And Greg, for you, again, always appreciate the hard work you do for Sunday night, this being, or Sunday morning in America that you're doing today. Also, you mentioned when I came on, I'm a 31-year PW Torch, the senior PW Torch VIP subscriber. Next month will be 32 years that I've been a Torch subscriber. And I've always – so anybody who's listening right now who's not a subscriber now, say take a look or take a listen, or actually do both, because there is still a newsletter there and the website. And it's a great value for your money. And, Greg, that's all I have unless you have anything for me.
No, Brian, thanks, as always, not only for calling us up and giving some thoughts to chew on here, but also being such a longtime subscriber to the Torch. Really appreciate it.
It sounds really bad when, you know, I'm probably – my subscription is as old as some of the callers or some of the listeners, but, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is indeed. Brian, really appreciate that. And pwtorch.com/govip is where you can go to check out a potential subscription to the Torch if you're listening to this here on the free side or even live on pwtorchdailycast.com. So back to the phones. We still got a few callers on hold, so let's get to them here. 478. This is Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. Good to hear from you. Hello, Darrell.
Oh, my bad, Greg. My bad. I was on mute.
It's all good.
How you doing tonight?
How are you? I'm doing well.
All right. It's been a minute since I spoke to you. Shout out to your Jaguars for making it in the playoffs and, you know, pulling off a win.
Very exciting. Yeah. More to come next year, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, something to build off of. Now, to talk about the show tonight, it was okay show, the two Rumbles. Was more paint by numbers and things. So I'm gonna talk about things that happened in the Rumble. My first couple of questions. Tonight, I think we've seen a few feuds that are gonna end up in WrestleMania build up. I think we possibly seen Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar in one of those matches of a feud probably building up. Also, if Logan Paul is not facing maybe a John Cena, which I don't think so now, but and this where my first question would go, do you see us getting the Logan brothers versus Braun Strowman and Ricochet, especially after that wild of a moment they had, I guess, with both of them jumping across the ring and body crossing each other, which showed the athleticism of both people? That'd be my first question about Brock and Bobby, and maybe the Logan part, the brothers versus Braun and Ricochet.
Yeah, that was an amazing moment with Ricochet and Logan Paul both springboarding and clotheslining each other in midair. That's going to be something replayed for years in WWE. I hadn't thought about that potential tag team match. That was certainly a moment that was created tonight in the Rumble. I lean more toward Logan Paul versus Seth Rollins. Logan Paul throughout Seth Rollins from the Royal Rumble. You know, I don't think they can stretch Rollins versus Theory all the way to WrestleMania. So, you know, Rollins is going to be someone who has something substantial to do at WrestleMania. He's a well-pushed guy, one of the top pushed acts on Monday Night Raw, so you know he's going to get something substantial to do at WrestleMania, and Logan Paul would fit that. I think Paul has proven that he is adept at the in-ring part of it, in addition to being a name that WWE can use for shows like WrestleMania. So that would be where I lean more so than a tag match.
I got you. I got you. And, you know, Seth made a lot of uproar with the interview that he gave and calling CM Punk a cancer, don't come back. So I always was thinking that that wasn't just something that's dropped out there. Just because watching it, it seemed like something that we know probably was planned or plotted out there. But, hey, I could be wrong. But you could be right on that as well. Now, my second question about the Rumble is the continuation of building of people like Gunther, who lasted so long. You also had 1 and 2 in the Women's Rumble last all the way to the last 3 and things like that. With that being said, do you see a big match coming from Gunther? Do they build a number 1 contendership match with Elimination Chamber, since you got to have at least 2 chamber matches there? And do they still, I guess, the Liv Morgan continue push and build is continuing to go because she did last that long with that? And I like that they brought back Asuka and with the face paint from when she was over there in Japan. So what do you think about those 3 people right there and their trajectory?
Asuka, I think her days as a really highly pushed act are over. Now, maybe WWE could look at the reaction she got tonight in a Women's Royal Rumble, where not a lot of people got a big reaction. And maybe the decision makers will look at that and say, you know, maybe there's still gas in that tank. Maybe there's still things that we can get out of her as a top push act. And certainly, you know, if you look at it from an in-ring perspective, she was one of, if not the strongest in-ring performer in the Rumble tonight. Sometimes, you know, head and shoulders above the people that she was in the ring with. And that stood out as well. You know, you talk about Liv Morgan. It did seem like sort of like Asuka, where she had been passed by a little bit for some top spots. She had had her moment, and it seemed like that they were working on other people. But with the run she had here tonight, you know, maybe they could be gearing up for something more for her at some point. And then you know, Gunther, it really all depends on what kind of Elimination Chamber they're going to run. I think Gunther has, even though he's Intercontinental Champion, and that sort of conflicts with being in a traditional number 1 contender Elimination Chamber match, I think you kind of have to put him in there after his performance at the Rumble. That dictated that. So, you know, we talked earlier in the show about Sami Zayn being in an Elimination Chamber and becoming number 1 contender and facing Roman Reigns in one night of WrestleMania while Cody Rhodes faces him in another. But it really all depends on how they do that, how they split that. Do they decide to split titles and run a number 1 contender match in the Elimination Chamber like they've done in the past when the belt has been split? Or do they do one women's chamber match and a tag team chamber match where maybe Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are in there and they earn a shot at the Usos at WrestleMania? So we're still not really sure what the chamber pay-per-view is going to look like in terms of the chamber matches themselves. But I think if you have a number 1 contender match in a chamber, you got to have Gunther in there.
Yes, sir. Or you can have the title, since he really don't have a contender right now, you can have the title defended in there and continue to build him as strong when he defended his title in an Elimination Chamber match. So that's also as well. But you went back and to my third point, which I say this for last because y'all have talked about this a few times, was what happened at the end of that match with Sami, Kevin, Jay, which was Jay acting in that moment when Roman first, I don't think y'all talked about this, but when Roman first stopped him because he was ready to put around his neck, then Christian him as Sami Uso, like he thought that that's all he had to do for Sammy. That's all Sammy had to do was just prove himself, stay out there, don't get in the way, don't damage nothing. And he good. He a made man. He making it. And then when Roman pulled him, he was like, nah, you could see Jay face change and stuff like that. And him and Sammy both, they're acting in both. Sammy on how he was looking when Kevin Owens was getting thrown down and beat down and stuff like that, to when he went ahead and hit Roman. And then the look on Jay face and like, man, you my brother. You supposed to be my brother. Like, we were supposed to, this is supposed to be our thing. And then when Jimmy was the one who hit him, when most people thought it would be Jay who would do that, and you could see the emotion in Jay's face all the way showing when they kept showing him walking in the back. I always felt like Sammy would take one person with him out of the bloodline to do. So I'm loving where the story could go. And based off of how you seen Monday, the tag team titles of Raw was defended by Sammy and Jay, not Sammy and not Jay and Jimmy, because it could have been taken right away from them then. So they have a couple of different avenues to go down. And I know most people want to see, you know, Kevin maybe and Sammy, but they have so many avenues. And just listening to that pop that Jay got as well by turning his back and leaving up out of there, and it brings back to the beginning of the story when he wouldn't bow down to Roman. When he, what made him be calling himself main event Jey Uso, when people wanted to see him fight tooth and nail against Roman and don't bow down and call him the tribal chief. And you got to think about, it got to be some type of retaliation in the back for when Jey said, I don't give a damn about the tribal chief, excuse my language. So I'm interested to see. And would you be inclined to see if maybe Jay don't turn on Sammy and they stay with each other and they talking about splitting the title? That's the way you split the titles, with maybe Solo and Jimmy defend one set of titles and you got Jay and Sammy. What are your thoughts on that?
Wow. Yeah, that would be pretty complicated to get there, I think. But it's an intriguing thought exercise, I think. Like I said at the outset, I think that's, you know, we know where Sammy stands right now. There's no going back from him. There's still the thought that Jay could end up back with the bloodline at some point. And if not, you know, if you're fantasy booking Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens as tag team champions, you know, where does that leave Jay? I mean, is he a third wheel? Does he go out on a singles run? I find it hard to believe that with Sammy giving up his spot in the bloodline for Kevin Owens, that Sammy and Kevin Owens don't end up back together as a tag team, and that Sammy goes with Jey Uso. I think that would be a little strange to do. So there's still a lot of untangling that has to happen here, but it is interesting to see maybe splitting the tag titles in some form or fashion plays a part in that. So, that is interesting, Darrell.
Yes, sir. And with the stipulation that I was saying, it all still fits in the story that they already telling. Jay did say he didn't give a damn about Roman. He was the first one to define him. The one who laid down and never gave him a fight was always Jimmy. So I would think his loyalty was always never, you know, one even to his brother. He gave in. Solo came in, gave in as well. And when Sammy looked, he didn't want to bash Kevin Owens. It wasn't that he was trying to save Kevin. He just felt like, okay, you did enough. But when he hit Roman, the first person he turned and looked to saw him look for acceptance and stuff. And based off of what they did on Friday and what he told Jay, hey, whatever you want me to do, I do whatever you want me to do for you. For you.
Yep.
And tonight, the first person he looked at was Jay. and to see what gratification that he was gonna give him. And he was like, and he said, I'm sorry. Forgive me. That's who he asked for forgiveness from, was from Jay, not from nobody else. Not even Roman.
Yeah.
Not even Kevin. So that's what they got a lot of intriguing stories.
Yeah, just fantastic stuff. You're absolutely right. Darrell, thank you for calling in tonight with your Rumble thoughts and questions, and we hope to hear from you again soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, back to the phones we go. The 615 area code, Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Thanks for holding on for us late into the evening.
Greg, for you, man, I would do anything for you. No questions asked. I mean, just
that might come in handy later. I really appreciate that.
No, I'm serious. No, like what Brian and Reverend Keith, you know, both talk about all the time. You know, you have to, you know, stay up late of course it's fun to talk about these shows, but it does get late, and it, you know, you have just a lot going on. But I appreciate what you do, and Brian and Reverend Keith are two of the best, and Darrell's awesome as well. It's always good to hear what he's thinking too. So as far as the show. Man, it was a really good show. You know, there's things I gripe about. There was some stuff that, you know, that wasn't the greatest tonight, and I think the Bray stuff was part of that. I didn't really like the Bray match, and I didn't think I would like it, and I didn't like it. But I think overall it was a really good show, and I wanted to, you know, just kind of talk about, you know, that last segment, just because, again, it was so polarizing. And, you know, of course, what was impressive too is I thought the match between Roman and Kevin was just great. I mean, I thought it was a great match. I mean, you knew that, like everybody said, and especially Ben said in the building, like, you know, you knew there was no way Kevin was winning, but it was just, they still drew you in, and it was a really, really good match, and they both worked their butts off, and it was just so good. Story was just so well told. And then the Sammy stuff. I was actually with my friend Anthony, who was on with me on one of Wade's post shows, and we got to go to Nashville to watch Raw live in person. And I went to his house and was watching it. And I mean, we were just sucked into what they were doing, man. It was just so well done. I mean, golly. I mean, WWE, there's so many things you can nitpick, and there's stuff I don't like, and there's stuff I gripe about, especially with the women. And I'll talk about that here in a minute. But that story is just so well told, and Sammy now is just so over, and when he comes back off this, you know, being beat down, I mean, he is just going to be – you have two made faces right now with him and Cody, and it's really fun to see when WWE does stuff in a good way, what can come out of that. So I don't know if you talked about it with any of the callers. I know you probably brought it up really fast, but, you know, was the Roman – KO match itself as good as I thought? Because I thought it was really well done, everything about it.
I thought it was good. You know, it did have the problem of not really thinking that Kevin Owens was going to win, even though he did get a couple near falls toward the end. You know, it wasn't the kind of spectacle match that you've come to expect from Roman Reigns, so people might take points off for that just because that there's become such a high level. And not even that the matches are technically good, but the Roman Reigns matches are they seem so special because he doesn't wrestle very often. And when he does, they seem to be events. They seem to be these spectacle matches. And really all we got in this match was a ref bump, which, you know, personally for me, I'm over the ref bumps in Roman Reigns matches. Granted, and I tweeted this out as it was happening, but WWE has done a really nice job of pulling way back on the number of ref bumps they do, but they still do way too many in Roman Reigns matches. And, you know, having the visual pinfall by Owens, I thought, was kind of unnecessary. I'm not sure that was really needed there in that match. From a technical standpoint, it was good. The bump that Kevin Owens took on the stairs, like the back of his head on the stairs, was frightening.
Yes.
But the match itself was good, but I wouldn't go above and beyond that in terms of superlatives for it.
Yeah, and Greg, I see what you're saying. Like, I mean, I get that we knew Roman was going to win. And so I give you that. And so, you know, I mean, great probably is a strong word, but I still think it was really, really good. I mean, yeah, the ref bump, at least it was a not as bad of a ref bump as we've seen. I mean, he still went out the ring and still acted like kind of like, oh, I got hit with a cannonball or something, and just like acted like he flew up. And it's like, okay, let's not – it was a little too much, and I do agree with that part. That was a fair criticism. But I just thought overall, I thought they worked really hard, and they, you know, they tried to get you in as best as they could, knowing the situation they were in. But I wanted to talk about the – I wanted to just go back to the Women's Royal Rumble, because I know Reverend Keith was kind of saying he didn't like that they didn't have a lot of NXT people. You know, again, I love Reverend Keith, but I disagree. I thought they did the Women's Royal Rumble was built very badly going into it, because a lot of the women have not been built and have not been booked very well. And that is the problem, because of outside of the top four or five women, there's just not a lot of – there's depth, but they're just not built well. There's depth there. There's talent there. They just don't do a good job with the talent they have. And so I thought with Roxanne coming in, I thought she did well. I thought, you know, she should have lasted a little longer, like you were saying, but I thought they did a good job with her. Zoe, I thought, looked really good. You know, Indy, I'm not a fan of. I was just glad that they didn't have a lot of legends, because I was expecting, you know, Trish was going to be back, Lita was going to be back. I was expecting all of them to be there. And when they weren't, I was pleasantly surprised, because at least there was a lot of the talent that they've had in the match. And I thought the match was pretty well done for the most part. There were a few botches here and there, which is going to happen with a Rumble match. It's an hour long. Everything's not going to go perfectly well. But I thought the only thing that really, I think, bummed me out was Liv just – I'm just not a fan of what Liv's doing as a character, and I just think they're – I don't think she should have lasted that long. It was what it was. It was fine. You know, she worked hard. I just think – and the main question I was going to ask you was, I really was impressed with what Piper Niven did. I'm glad they gave her name back. Dewdrop was the stupidest name ever, and I'm glad that they gave her name back. And I really want to see what you think they can do with her, because I think she had a good showing in the match. I thought she did really well. I thought she had some big singular, you know, moves that she had. Like, do you think there's any way that they can build her back up into something pretty positive going from this?
I think so, more now that she's Piper Niven than if she was Dewdrop. I think that was a huge barrier to her getting over to any kind of championship level, is just that name. I mean, it was just very hard to take seriously. They needed to get rid of it if they wanted her to get to the next level and be a championship-type wrestler that she can be, which, you know, if you've watched her matches before, you know that she certainly has the talent to be a championship-level performer in WWE, but they had to ditch the name. So I think that was encouraging to see tonight, that she's back to Piper Niven. And, you know, she had one of the couple standout performances in the Women's Rumble tonight. So those were all encouraging signs for her, for a division that, you know, I think you could tell based on the reactions that the women were getting or not getting tonight, that there are very few women in WWE who fans view as real stars. And so I think getting to kind of start over again in some ways with Piper Niven is going to be advantageous for WWE, because they've got a chance to build her back up into something more meaningful.
Yeah, and I definitely didn't like the way they, or what they did with Nia. I definitely didn't like that, because number one, I'm not a big fan of Nia, and obviously Mike Johnson was saying that she was going to be there, and so I was expecting her to be there, and so her at 30, and then just them to throw her out, I was kind of like, okay, we're using 30 on that, you know, it's fine, whatever. But that was kind of a bummer. But the thing I wanted to, I wanted to talk about the Men's Rumble really fast. I was going to ask you about the women again. As far as the Men's Rumble, like you guys were saying, I thought Gunther, I was not expecting him to be number one. And that really kind of threw me off at first. And then for him to last the whole match, I just thought, man, they're building him up so well. I'm glad WWE sees what we see in him, and they're building him to a really high level. And I'm curious to see, you know, where they go, what matches they've got for him. You know, him and Drew can be really good. Him and Brock, obviously, can be really good. So I like that. And Cody, like I said, I'm really excited for him and Roman to see where they go. And then the last women's question I had for you, and I'll end here and let the rest of the callers get on, was now that Rhea won, and I think, you know, she had to, I think it was the right call. You know, I mean, if you had to choose, who do you think she's going to go with and face at WrestleMania? Because I think you have the match with Bianca because she's obviously on Raw with Bianca, and it would be fine. I think it would be good there because, again, I just think Bianca has – I agree with Wade. I think 2021, she was fantastic. I thought she was building up really well. And since then, I just think, you know, like a lot of people said, I agree. She's very, very cold right now. Her gimmick just kind of getting really lost on me. I'm not enjoying it as much as I did. And the feud with Alexa definitely hasn't helped. Do you think that having Rhea beat her is the best option? Or would you go somehow have her switch and decide to go with Charlotte? Because, again, she has unfinished business there after losing to Charlotte at the Performance Center and then building up knowing Charlotte is a face now. It does work in that scenario. Who do you think would be best? And I just wanted to kind of hear your thoughts on that. And like I said, Greg, I always appreciate you, man, being here late. And I just appreciate all you do for the Torch and what, and hopefully I get to call on another Sunday here very soon. And I appreciate you taking my call, my friend.
Absolutely, Sean. Hope to hear from you again soon. You know, my instinct and my gut is to say, well, you know, Rhea chooses Bianca Belair. I think they've teased that a little bit in the past on Monday Night Raw, that direction for WrestleMania. So it would be a really good match. It would be, I think, a real clash of styles in a positive way. But then you look at the other side and you look at Charlotte Flair, and, you know, Charlotte comes back as a babyface. She would match up squarely with the heel Rhea Ripley. They have the history from 2020 where it seemed like Rhea was going to take that next step, and she never really did against Charlotte. And, you know, there was something I think Ronda Rousey mentioned in passing that she was kind of over feuding with Charlotte Flair and wanted to do something new. So if WWE abides by that, it's not going to be Rousey versus Charlotte at WrestleMania. So Charlotte will need something meaningful to do. Rousey will need something meaningful to do as well, but that would clear the way for Rhea Ripley to face Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. So really, the more I think about it, the more I think it's not so much a lock that Ripley chooses Bianca Belair. I think the doors are a little more wide open than we would have otherwise thought. A couple more phone calls. 914 area code. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg, Brad in Florida. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brad. Good to hear from you tonight. What'd you think of the Rumble?
Yeah, man. So, you know, listen, this has created an incredible conundrum for WWE. And there is no option now other than to have Zayn win either the Universal title, the WWE title, or both titles. And I understand Cody Rhodes won the Rumble. This segment at the end did not do any favors for Cody Rhodes, in my opinion. You know, this it didn't, man. You can't look at this and say, oh, wow, like, who do you think that 95, if you asked 10,000 WWE fans, what do you think would be the percentage of, would you rather see Cody win the championship or Sami Zayn win the championship after that incredibly emotional, cinematic? I mean, yeah, Cody Rhodes is a nice story and all, and I love the guy. I love the guy. I was screaming for him to win at the end against Gunther. But it just can't compare to the story that they themselves have created. They themselves have made this monster. Now they have to complete it. And I'm sorry, a tag team championship for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against, you know, the Usos, if Jay goes back to the dark side and says, Roman, I'm sorry, man, you know, and you have a little bit of that. It does not cut it at this point after what they did tonight. It will not work. It's not what the people want. I'm sorry, but Cody Rhodes' match at WrestleMania cannot be for the Undisputed Championship. Sami Zayn has to win Elimination Chamber. This has to happen. I'm talking about people are going to be enraged at the product, Greg, after what you're seeing. I mean, this is the best story in a decade, maybe longer.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you absolutely bring up a good point. And I don't think WWE knew what they had for the longest time. And as you continue to go down this road with Sami Zayn, and you continue to have him be a part of the bloodline and do these teases, and then finally tonight he turns and you have the crowd absolutely explode. I think if you're WWE, if you're Triple H, you're looking around going like, they're saying the same thing you are, Brad, whereas like, you know, we kind of got to go with this guy now. Like they've really booked themselves into a corner where I think at one point early on, you could have gotten out of this with Sami Zayn, you know, maybe facing Roman Reigns at an off-brand pay-per-view and losing or whatever and then moving on. But the way they've built this up and the way they've made Sami the centerpiece of the Bloodline story, it seems like WWE kind of knows what they have because they've made him the main focus. They've made his turn the main focus of their number two pay-per-view of the year, the Royal Rumble. So it seems like WWE does acknowledge the power that Sami Zayn has over the audience. I think there was always a question of how WWE saw Sami Zayn the wrestler and what his value was on the card. And I do tend to agree with you, Brad. It's you got a Daniel Bryan situation here where anything but this guy is going to cause the fans to riot.
Yeah, it's just, listen, when Roman Reigns, the biggest act in all of pro wrestling, walked in the ring tonight before the match or as he was doing his entrance or right after his entrance, I should say, who was the crowd chanting for? They were going, Sammy Uso, at the end, Roman Reigns, you're getting an F you Roman chant from 50,000 people, and how many more millions at home? You cannot go in any other direction. Again, the tag team titles, no, sorry, no thanks. Sami Zayn is the biggest act in pro wrestling right now. And I know it sounds crazy to say, and I'm not saying he's, you know, better than Roman or has more, you know, whatever than Roman, but right now, in this moment, right now, and I'm not even a big Sami Zayn fan, man. I used to look at him, I'd be like, this guy looks like a regular guy that you see. He doesn't even have muscles. Like, it has been done so masterfully. You cannot go in another direction. I love Cody Rhodes. I don't think that this is not about Cody Rhodes. It's now about completing the best story that the WWE could ever tell and has ever told. And everyone, there's just no other option, Greg. There's no other option. And I want to scream it from the rooftops. I wish I could just, you know, I just don't know if they're going to do it. But they need to do it. And again, Cody's match cannot be for the Undisputed. This has to happen at WrestleMania. You cannot end it at Elimination Chamber with a match between Sami and Roman because it ends it too quickly. That's 3 weeks from now. You want to draw this out another 3 months, another, you know, 2 months, 2.5 months. You absolutely do.
Let me ask you this. Is the half measure that's been talked about where they split the titles and Roman takes on Sami at one night of WrestleMania and he takes on Cody Rhodes at another night of WrestleMania, would that work in your mind, or does the focus have to be on Sami and Roman and the focus and attention can't be split with Cody?
Let me tell you, man. What do you think the fans would react more positively to? Sami winning the title from Roman after all of this in an incredible situation at WrestleMania, or Cody winning it at the end of WrestleMania? Case closed. You know what I mean? Like, you know what the answer is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know what the answer is. And it's just, if you're thinking about your fans and you're thinking about the people that are actually invested and care about your product, you cannot go in another direction. And listen, I thought it was really strange that they started the night with the Men's Rumble. I said, how anticlimactic is this? You know, you have a match against Kevin Owens. We all know what's going to happen. We all know Roman's not losing both championships here. So why is this the last thing that they're putting on? Why is it? And you know, we thought Sami was coming into the Rumble. Obviously not happening. Whatever. So when you get to that point at the end, now you see why – It was bigger than anything Cody could have done tonight. It was just bigger. And the same goes for the championship. I'm sorry, there's no other ending, and Sami has to win it too. There's just no other ending. And I mean, my wife, Greg, literally had tears. Like, she was like shocked and had tears in her eyes. Like, this was like watching like the best Martin Scorsese film. Like, this was like, like, this is unbelievable, man. Seriously, I just, again, it can't go in another direction. And if the solution it ends up being the tag team titles, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are going to take down the Usos with a, you know, reform Jey Uso apologizing to Roman and they're back together, that's not good enough. It has to be Roman.
Yeah.
It cannot be the Usos. It's not good enough after what they did. So Triple H, either if he's not planning on doing this, has done his entire product a huge disservice. And if he is, kudos to him. But I don't know how you do this with Cody. I don't know what you do, but it has to be done, man. And that's my call.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Very passionate. I get it. It's going to be interesting because I think I agree. As time with each week that passes and with each storyline development that you see in this Bloodline story, it becomes increasingly clear that, as Brad is saying, it's got to end with Sammy versus Roman. And now the question is, you didn't have Sammy in the Rumble, and there was a potential story being told there where Roman could put Sammy in the Rumble in a way to protect himself, have Sammy win, and Roman assumes that, you know, Sammy would forfeit his opportunity to challenge Roman at WrestleMania, and Sammy ends up deciding, no, he's going to face Roman. You could have done something like that, but now the question is, how do you get that opportunity that Cody Rhodes was guaranteed by winning the Rumble? How do you transfer that to Sami Zayn if you're not going to do the two-night deal where Sami faces Roman on one night and Cody faces him on another? How do you transfer that title shot from Cody to Sami? Maybe Cody is just going to be magnanimous and say, hey, brother, like, I see what's going on here. Like, you need this more than I do right now. I don't know. Like, that's a tough one. And so that's why we watch. We want to see how WWE gets themselves out of these situations that they get themselves into as well. Looks like the last call of the night will be the 607 area code, and then we've got a few emails to run through before we say goodnight. 607, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, this is Sridhar from the Bay Area, but today I'm in San Antonio. I was at the event. I hope you can hear me. Once you confirm that, I'll go ahead with my point.
Yeah, I hear you just fine. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
and being a live correspondent for us tonight.
My pleasure. You know, I've never heard this point made by anybody before in the years I've been a Torch subscriber. When it comes to the Rumble, and you get this action that occurs outside the ring, I think, to me, it cheapens the whole peril and jeopardy of elimination attempts when people are attempting to get other competitors out of the ring. I've been a fan since 92, and I watched the Royal Rumble. 93 was my first one, when Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, that was the last time they called a match together. And it was a bland Royal Rumble, but I felt like the wrestlers, they were it all centered around the prize and getting others over the top rope. Now it feels like they're more just trying to create spots and, okay, stories and angles, I get, but am I the only one who thinks that you don't really get any kind of suspense or tension in when there's a guy or girl hanging on the top rope trying to stay in, or even hanging on the apron?
Yeah, no, I definitely get that, especially – you know, what really gets me, and this is kind of an extension, I think, of what you're talking about, is you've got the people who have been eliminated and they freely interfere in the match where, you know, they get back into the match and they eliminate someone and that somehow that's fair game. or you have someone like The Miz tonight where he comes down to the ring and hangs out at ringside for a little while and doesn't get in the ring immediately, and you have all these refs standing around ringside, and yet none of them can force him into the ring. So I thought tonight was like WWE tends to do this every year where they somehow just take the rules of the Rumble and kind of like make a mockery of them. I thought this year they did that a little less than they usually do. That's not to say they didn't do it, because I just gave two examples of how they did it tonight. But it's actually, it was actually kind of less than they've done in the past. But you're right, you know, there is that lack of in-ring drama when you do have so much going on outside the ring.
Yeah. So yeah, and that leads into my second point. I'm glad you agree with me on that. The other thing, and yeah, I'm agreeing with your last point that since Triple H has come in, I've not been a fan of it the way I guess the smart fans have been. I found the product quite bland. But I caveat that by saying that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think in the Vince McMahon's philosophy has always been, we have to top ourselves with something, somebody falling off an even higher cage, or breaking more tables, or we have to have some surprise entrant, or some pop from a celebrity appearance or something. It's just always topping and topping. And I remember Triple H years ago saying that we have to pull back on that. And maybe it's also a lack of experience by Triple H. The trying to get these mega pops in the Rumble for, say, surprise contestants, if they are still doing that, it takes a lot of advanced planning, dare I say, 9 months or a year long to get those surprises. And but when it comes to the weekly TV shows, I find the product a little bit bland, more in-ring action, not as much I guess, what's the word, soap opera or Gaga, as Pat Patterson said. And again, I think I can't decide whether one's better than the other. I think Vince's record speaks for himself, and he's made this company successful. But I think there really is a place for making the product a little bit more bland and sports-like, and like I said at the beginning, Royal Rumble 93, like, where it's the simple things that you can get people to be immersed in. It's not about seeing who can fall off a ladder and break their neck and then get up. I don't know. Is there anybody else out there who thinks the same about me about Triple H's style of production? I've only heard from live casts or Wade Keller podcasts that things are so much better because there is just less inconsistency. I don't think that's the only way to grade a product. It's like a school teacher, which you are, Greg, grading an essay based on the number of spelling mistakes. I mean, yeah, it'd be better if they don't make spelling mistakes, but does that make one essay better than another? Your thoughts on that would be interesting. And that's all my points for tonight, unless you have any questions you want to ask me about my in-person experience.
Yeah, I'll definitely ask you a few questions, but I agree with you. The consistency that people are always pointing to, I think the reason for that is because there were so many inconsistencies when Vince was running things, and that's got to be the low water point, you know, in professional wrestling. We can't be okay with just saying, well, this doesn't make any sense, but who cares, because it's just wrestling. You know, there has to be a bottom. And I think the bottom has to be, give us some consistency in the storytelling. So when people are complimenting Triple H for, oh, it's a lot more a consistent product than it was under Vince McMahon, it is one part of it, as you mentioned, but it's a part that WWE got so wrong so often under Vince that I think people are going out of their way to point out that it's so much better today. But you are right. Like, there are other aspects to grade and to look at, and one of them is making sure that you're not trying to go out there and just create that viral moment every time. Because when you try to create those viral moments, you're always trying to top it, because once something goes viral, you have to do something more extravagant and bigger and more newsworthy. And sometimes you can't. Sometimes you just have to pull back a little bit. And I think that's the phrase you used in talking about Triple H's booking is, you know, you kind of have to build a base before you can get to that high level. Whereas under Vince, it was just high level after high level after high level, and you don't worry about building that baseline. And so I think that's what Triple H is trying to do. And, you know, we've heard talk of Triple H maybe not even getting into his creative bag of tricks until WrestleMania season or even after in 2023. They're just trying to kind of set the foundation for what he wants WWE creatively to be under his tenure. Now, the question is now, is he going to get that opportunity with Vince back in the building, quite literally, you know, back in Titan Towers working is the report. And who knows, he could decide to stick his nose back in creative and meddle in things. So, yeah, totally agree with what you're saying there. As for the live perspective, just kind of your impressions of the crowd, what they reacted to, what they didn't. Just, you know, we already had Ben Tucker who was on, and he was there live and gave us a lot of live perspective. So I won't ask a ton of questions, but just kind of your impression overall of the crowd and what they reacted to and what they didn't.
Sure. So I joined about two callers back when, which is quite late in the show, when I think they were saying that for the Women's Rumble, there just wasn't that much involvement in the Women's Rumble. And you know, I'll just caveat this with two things. I was sitting, as you look from the hard camera, if you go up to the second tier, this small tier in the middle, to the left of the middle, so maybe somewhat above the entranceway in the middle tier, not directly above, bit kind of halfway between the middle and the entranceway, above that, opposite the hard camera. You know, one thing I noticed, and I actually used to live in Cardiff, where the Clash at the Castle was. My parents still live there, actually. I've been to that Principality Stadium, and that was one of the first covered stadiums in the United Kingdom. And with that roof on there, and with that stadium has a capacity of, I think, 70,000 people, and with that rooftop, the noise just stays inside and is deafeningly loud. So I actually wore earplugs for the whole thing. And what's interesting about that is it actually filters out a lot of the echoing, and you actually really hear what are people reacting to. And yeah, I sensed that with the Women's Rumble as well, what the earlier caller said. People were not really sure what to think of it. They don't know, or at least I don't, who is the face, who is the heel, is this person from NXT? I don't remember this character. Oh, that person used to be Doudrop. I think partly I'm getting old and I'm slow to learn, so I can't keep up with characters a lot. But I was glad that the other caller said, I think that to me, as much as anything, the turnover of new talent just means that you're not going to pop for the majority of the talent that comes out there. But the other just little nuance, I remember the guy behind me when they opened the show with the Men's Rumble, the guy behind me said, "Huh?" That was a more loud version of what I was silently thinking. So I think people were a little bit quite surprised about that. I was actually glad, because these pay-per-views before Triple H again used to get so long, and by the time it got to the stuff that mattered, I was so tired, I was not paying attention. So I was glad that it was while it was fresh, so that was a good thing. I think after the show, after the live portion went off the air, it was just Sammy and Kevin left in the ring, and they gradually limped off, and the crowd were chanting. I think they were chanting something. I think it was Sammy. So there is some kind of payoff that needs to be had there, like the last caller said. One more just very anecdotal thing. After the Rumble, that was the time where people said, I need to go to the bathroom, I need to get a drink. And I think I missed two matches while trying to get both. Those are what spring to mind at the moment, just more about crowd reactions. I'm trying to think. You know, I'm so confused these days. Who is a face? Who is a heel? I think turns since the Attitude Era, since Kane and Undertaker were flipping between who's a face, who's a heel, I just can't keep up with who am I supposed to cheer, who am I not supposed to cheer. I don't know. I couldn't tell you when Bobby Lashley turned from face to heel or what. Brock Lesnar, maybe. Roman Reigns, I don't regularly watch Friday Night SmackDown, so I don't know who I'm supposed to be cheering anymore, but I think in general the crowd were loud for the expected stars. But basically anybody who has any kind of name value and is not one of these floating or drifting talents between NXT or I've been in the company more than a year, just any, I think when you recognize anybody, then the crowd pops. And I guess somebody like Asuka probably epitomizes that as much as anything. It's just that if I can sum it up, I'd say, I've heard of that person. I'm going to get up and cheer. I know that person from TV. Beyond that, I couldn't tell you what the fans were really into.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I appreciate you calling in after a long night of watching the Royal Rumble and giving your thoughts and opinions on what happened live. And thank you so much for calling in tonight.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate too. I don't show my appreciation, but the fact that you stay up late so that we can just have a little bit more fun and process what's happened, always appreciate it. And I hope you keep doing it for a long time.
I hope to as well. So thank you for those kind words as well. Two emails to get to here before we sign off for the evening. The first was actually sent about halfway through the show, and this was from Zach. He says, Greg, I tried to give WWE a chance. I feel like the Royal Rumble is an opportunity for a fresh start on the road to WrestleMania. Tonight, they squandered the opportunity totally and completely. The best story in WWE right now by a mile is Sami Zayn and the Bloodline. Instead of paying that off, they decided to run with a two-faced hypocrite making his return. I try to sit my feelings for Cody aside, but the thought of him and not Sami dethroning Roman is slightly nauseating. More than that, not having Sami in the match at all, but including the likes of Dominic Mysterio, Omos, and Logan Paul, is just insulting. I literally turned off the match the minute Logan Paul was announced. I might watch the Women's Rumble match, but I'm not expecting much. So Zach sent this very early on after the first Rumble match. Curious to see if his opinion changes after what happened in the main event and after the potentiality of Sami Zayn now in a bigger match than expected at WrestleMania with that turn, even though he wasn't in the Rumble. And, you know, Sami not being in the Rumble, I was surprised because the top two guesses that I had seen for people making for Rumble winners was Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes. And for one of the top two potential winners not to be in the match at all, I think was interesting. Obviously, what they had planned at the end was bigger than Sami playing a smaller part in the Rumble, but still worth bringing up nonetheless. And we have an email from Jason. He says, Hi, Greg. How do you not go with Roman versus Sami at WrestleMania after that? So rarely does WWE get such passionate and visceral crowd reactions like that. From the pop for Sami's chair shot on Roman to Jay's walkout and the FU chance at Reigns. Cody's reactions for entering and winning the Rumble were far less enthusiastic. I don't think any fault of Cody's, just unfortunate timing with how hot the Bloodline act has been. How could or should WWE go about booking Sami into the main event? I found it quite sad that Bray's return match had to be a sponsored gimmick match. It was terrible. What do you think he does heading into WrestleMania? Thanks, Jason. So, yeah, this is kind of echoing what Brad called in and said about Sami versus Cody. And it does feel like that Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns stuff when the fans were desperate for Daniel Bryan and WWE wanted to go with Roman Reigns as the top babyface and the fans were just not going along with it. If you don't do something major with Sami at WrestleMania, you risk a crowd taking over that Cody versus Roman Reigns match. You even risk that at Elimination Chamber. And I think WWE is smart enough to know Elimination Chamber in Montreal, Sami Zayn from Montreal. They have to do something big with him there. But it's increasingly becoming clear that Sammy has to play a bigger role at WrestleMania than perhaps WWE even anticipated when they started this Bloodline storyline. And even maybe as recent as 3 months ago, maybe WWE thought that they could get away with, having Sammy, the example is the tag match, right? Sammy and Kevin Owens against the Usos. That would be a good consolation prize for Sami Zayn, and it would pay off the Bloodline storyline because he would be involved with the Usos, who at the time more than Roman Reigns is who he had the back and forth with, and now I don't see how you fall back on that. I think they have to get away, and I don't know, maybe it's Cody and Sammy facing Roman Reigns. Maybe it's Cody versus Sammy versus Roman. Maybe it's a triple threat, but they've got to figure out a way to split that hair heading into WrestleMania now. As for Bray Wyatt, look, the in-ring was never the strong suit for Bray Wyatt. I think the get-in, get-out type of match that he had tonight is probably what you want to do for him. The crowd has historically tended to lose their patience very quickly with him from bell to bell. They're willing to put up with his promos and the lore and the extracurricular activities that he brings along with him to the ring. They're willing to put up with that, the live audiences, but not so much the wrestling. So heading into WrestleMania, I mean, it's so hard to say. I never expected his first feud to be with LA Knight coming into Royal Rumble. So it is hard to say. Part of it, I think, depends on Alexa Bliss as well. And how much time is spent getting her back on the wagon of The Fiend and Bray Wyatt, how much time is spent there. But it's so hard to say. I don't have a good feel of who Bray Wyatt would face at WrestleMania. Obviously, Wyatt is someone who WWE is investing a lot of television time and a lot of creative effort into, so it's got to be an opponent who can match that. And I'm not really sure who that is. I don't really see an obvious dance partner for him right now. You know, you've got, as far as on SmackDown, you've got Sheamus, you've got Drew McIntyre, you've got Gunther. I mean, you've got somebody like Karrion Kross. If you're going to have Bray Wyatt in a match, you know the match is already not going to be that good, no matter who his opponent is. So why not just put him against somebody else who's probably not going to be that good in Karrion Kross? And I think kind of having them do their own thing over here and not infecting any other matches might be the best way to go. Other than that, there's not really anybody that stands out to me on SmackDown for Bray Wyatt. Woo, 20 after 2 Eastern time on a Sunday morning. So I think that's going to do it for us, almost 2 hours of Royal Rumble Reacts. Thank you so much, everybody, for calling in. This show really lives and breathes with your involvement, whether it's via email, whether it's via phone call. And I hope you all can join us again next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on pwtorchdailycast.com. I do want to take a moment. Ben Tucker called in, was a live correspondent from the Rumble. He was my co-host last weekend. He does have a podcast called Fourth Time's the Charm, podcast where niche is neat. And this Thursday, they'll be talking about the Royal Rumble, as well as Ben's recent appearance on Wheel of Fortune. So if you're a Wheel of Fortune fan, he was actually on this week. So if you recognize that name and you can't place where you recognize that name from, it might be from that. So give Ben's podcast a listen coming up this week. So again, thank you so much. We're on every Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. We'll be on again, not tomorrow night, not this. I guess it's tonight now, but next weekend. And we've got Elimination Chamber coming up quickly. We've got we're approaching 1 month until AEW's next pay-per-view Revolution. We've got NXT. They've got a big show coming up on Saturday night, so we'll cover that next Sunday. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. Tweeted throughout the Royal Rumble tonight. We'll be tweeting moving forward as well, some big shows in pro wrestling. And again, thank you for joining us tonight, staying up late if you're listening live or checking us out on delay. And check us out again next week, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.